and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris. Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Recently, Prime Minister Anwar Ibrahim revealed that the government plans to introduce a new type of school, specifically for children of the poorest households in the country. Now, the concept for this new school, he said, would be similar to that of secondary boarding schools or MARA Junior Science Colleges, MRSMs. The Education Ministry has responded, saying that it aims to set up these schools by next year. So let's weigh some of the pros and cons of establishing such schools and what the ministry should take into consideration in its plans. Joining me now is Jennifer Lasimbang. She's with the Indigenous Peoples Network of Malaysia, Jaringan Orang Asal Malaysia, and she was the Assistant Minister of Education and Innovation for Sabah from 2018 till 2020. Jennifer, thank you for being on the show today. I'm wondering what your initial thoughts are on this initiative. I know we don't have that many details as to what the schools would entail, but I'm wondering what you would like to see, what you would like the government to really consider in the implementation of these schools.
Okay, thank you, Melissa. Hi, thank you very much, Asra Awani, for calling upon us to just give us some time to discuss this. And of course, as you said, we still do not have the details of the schools that's being proposed. But my initial thoughts are, as an Indigenous person, an Orang Asal in Malaysia living in Sabah, I should be happy that they are going to create such a school, but I am not, because at the time of day we are fighting for just, equitable, you know, we want our children to embrace diversity and to have an inclusive education. But such, these are of course just initial thoughts, but there are many other things that we should consider before we actually come up with such a very disturbing, I would say, policy for education and our children. Because so, you know, this would really have an impact on our education system.
Okay, before we get into that, because that's precisely why we wanted to talk to you today, to think about how, if these schools are established, would they serve Sabah most? And I want to think that through as to where they ought to be placed. Where would they cater to the most underserved communities?
You know, before we start thinking about, you know, because it's for poor, and we really have to think about what is poor. Children from rural communities, immediately we say, they are poor because they live in the rural areas. But it's not the poor in terms of not having the place, but it's the access to the schools where they still have to walk to schools, to go to the schools itself. Some of the remote islands, you need to provide boats and transportation. These are the ones that is really the challenge that we need to address in the first place. It's not building a new school, but how to get to those schools. That is more the questions that we should be asking, and the solution that we have to look for.
All right. I'm wondering, you know, here I am speculating what the Ministry of Education might do, but what I gather from the comments made by the Minister, the Prime Minister and the Education Minister, is that it seems that it could be boarding schools. So maybe building such schools and infrastructure and bringing children of the poorest households to stay in these schools, which hopefully are conducive environments for learning. Would that better serve communities who don't have access to schools, who, you know, it takes 4 hours to travel to school and therefore they don't go to school? Would that solve that problem of access and transportation?
Okay, of course, that would be one of the solutions. But, you know, universally, we should never take our children out of the family unit at that young age. I mean, in Sabah, we have children who have to be, you know, transported by boats, and these are not safe conditions. They're quite dangerous to go across the rivers and all that to go to the boarding schools, and the boarding schools are they're not well equipped. And you know, recently, remember the case of our orang asli children who ran away from the boarding school, and they died in the process. So these are the things that we should really, really consider before, you know, one solution. We should really understand the underlying causes, well, poverty, dropouts, and even, you know, malnutrition, stunting, and all those things that is really needed in the communities.
I'm so glad that you brought up the case of the 7 orang asli children who ran away, because that can also is also symptomatic of some of the issues around, you know, taking children out of their communities, out of their homes. Some boarding schools have been associated with a sense of detachment from one's cultural and community roots, you know, the pressure to assimilate, maybe particularly if you are from a minority or indigenous group. Do you think that this is something the government will consider, and how ought they consider this issue if they are planning to have these special schools, boarding schools, taking poor children and taking them away from their communities?
I mean, I think we really have to look at the quality of education and the curriculum itself. You know, we cannot, we have to decentralize the thinking behind giving children education at the moment, because we cannot just put everybody in the same, especially children who are from this very displaced and very marginalized situation. We can't just think about one box for them and put them there. There must be a time and effort actually to understand the situation. For example, in a longhouse, if there's a space for children to be taught in the longhouse together, still staying with the family till the parents, even the parents, are comfortable enough. What more the children, right? But to send them to a boarding school. And mind me, the boarding schools in the rural areas are not pretty. We have kids, you know, unable to study because they are eaten alive by bed bugs in the hostels. So always, Sabah is always number 16 in terms of achievement academically, but we forget to go in and say, why? Why are kids not doing well in school? And then when we look at the situation, infrastructure, you know, when I was the assistant minister then in 2018-19, we went through, and out of 1,200 schools in Sabah, 600 is dilapidated, 100 is declared unsafe. I mean, how can we... expect students to do well when the basic things, you know, during pandemic, less than 50% have access to internet. There's so many deeper problems, and why, you know, it's just not creating a school for the poor, but actually we have to look at the underlying causes. It's the poverty, even malnutrition. RMT helps, and during the pandemic, some of the parents who are receiving RMT, they are so, worried, or they're like, we can't go to school, kids going to go to school, so they don't have RMT, so they only have one meal a day during pandemic. And it's like, you know, although this may sound like it's a problem should be solved 30 to 40 years ago, but it's still happening in most rural and remote places in Sabah. So we really should really look at the underlying problems and find solutions for them.
Okay, so if you don't think the special schools will address the underlying problems, in fact, maybe, you know, just address the symptoms of children not having access to education, what then would you suggest as concrete measures to, if the intention of the Prime Minister and the Education Ministry is to ensure that the poor children from poor households are not left behind, that gap is closed, the education inequity gap is closed, what solutions would fit a Sabah context?
There are so many programs already, assistance in the existing schooling system. They already have collected data already of children from poor households. They already have assistance in terms of cash, or maybe through the Parent Teacher Association. So we should already look at what we have in hand, the data we have, and continue to assist. Like, for example, if they need transportation, if they need books, or even basic things, then the school should already have a data. I mean, the, you know, we shouldn't recreate, reinvent the wheel when we already know, trust the teachers, the systems, they're already there. But we are not listening. I don't know where, how, but it seems to be prevalent. And, you know, even our infrastructures, it is clearly the signs of neglect for the last 20, 30 years that half of the school in Sabah is still dilapidated. It's like, you know, schools don't disintegrate or they get dilapidated over 2-3 years. It's already like 20, 30 years that it needs replacement. And for me, like in some of the schools, they already way above and beyond the capacity, up to 2,400 students in one school. That's way too many for a secondary school. So, and you know, we should be looking at those things where when it's there's too many, we should not be just, you know, ignore those. And that's why the word equitable comes to mind, right? Equitable development is very important. Equitable way of distribution of quality teachers, materials, the books, you know, fix our internet in Sabah, all our, don't talk about electricity now, even water, we have problems in school. Just to give you an example, one time I visited a school and there were children not in the school. I said, why? Oh, because it's dry season. I said, what has got the dry season got to do with not going to school? Oh, when there's dry season, the school's got no water, the teachers won't come, so there's no school because the teachers are not there. I don't blame the teacher, but it's just situation that is so bad that we have to, you know, just fix the basic things. And therefore, we need to look at where we are failing the children. That's where we should be supporting. There's so many ways. Data is there. And I think, I think 4 years ago, there was a dashboard created by MOE that shows where the dilapidated schools are, but yeah, I think it's since been taken off. So these are the things. Put out the data, the industries can come in, the corporate companies can come in. They want to be part of the contributing to the development of the schools, even if it's just infrastructures or it's the program. They want to adapt children from poor household and give them extras that need help. I mean, we have to be more transparent and accountable in providing education to our children.
Jennifer, thank you so much for sharing your insights. I appreciate your time. Jennifer Lasimang, former Assistant Minister of Education and Innovation for Sabah there. We're going to take a very quick break here and consider this. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned. Hi, welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. Let's continue our discussion about the pros and cons of setting up special schools for children of the poorest households in the country. Now, as mentioned earlier, we haven't been able to ascertain many details yet as to what the schools would entail. So we're speaking to educators today to ask them what they would like the government to take into consideration in the implementation of these special schools. Chan Sun Sing joins us now. He's the CEO at Teach for Malaysia. Sun Sing, so TFM, Teach for Malaysia, has for the past decade sought to address education inequity in Malaysia. What is it that you would like, you think that the setting up of these special schools might do to reduce that inequity? Would the setting up of these schools do that? And, you know, help us think this through, this implementation of the special schools.
Yeah, it's good to be here, Melissa. Thanks for having me on the show again. You know, I think the vision of Teach for Malaysia is to see a day where every child in Malaysia, no matter what their background is, no matter where they are in the country, no matter how much money their parents earn, that every child in Malaysia will be able to realize their potential because they have access to quality education. Now, the reality is that there are so many factors that don't permit that to happen, right? But one of the, you know, things that we feel we would be able to see if that vision came true is that any parent in any community in Malaysia would have the confidence to send their children to any school in the country and believe that they would have the education that they deserve, right? And so I think that that would be the dream and the aspiration that we would have for schools in the country. So I think that when we think about this setting up of schools specifically for students, I think that we have to think through what the pros and cons of this are. Mm. The reality is that for so many students in the country today, they aren't getting the kind of education that they need in their particular, they don't have access in their particular communities, right? So there may be a short-term rationale for schools like this, but I think that it would have to be considered with the long-term aspiration of ensuring that no matter what school you go to, you're going to have quality education.
Okay, that's interesting. Let's think through the short-term consequences, though. And who needs these schools? Why are the current schools not serving the children of the poorest households? Wasn't that supposed to be the intention? And so why the need for special schools? What gap specifically will it address?
Yeah. So, I mean, the reality is that in the majority of schools in Malaysia, there is such a huge population of kids from underserved backgrounds, right? And so the reality is that every school in Malaysia needs to be a school that caters to students of every socioeconomic class, right? But that being said, in any school in the country, there are huge disparities, right? So what we often see in schools is that you'll see a range of student abilities, and oftentimes that is a lot of those things are attributed to their socioeconomic background. So for example, many kids who come from a low socioeconomic background may come into school without having gone to preschool or kindergarten. They may have parents at home that are not literate. So they come into school on day one already set back from many of their peers who are more financially able, right? There are compounding factors that poverty brings into this conversation, right? So many times these kids might not have access to basic school needs like uniforms, like stationaries, even things like meals and adequate nutrition, right? So I think that if a special school was to be set up as a short-term interim measure to serve the most economically disadvantaged children, it would have to be something that considers all of these the factors of a child that grows up in a poverty setting.
When you say short term, Sunsin, what were you kind of thinking? Is that a good idea to have maybe, you know, a kind of band-aid solution? Yes, but often with policies, we see that whenever there's too many changes in particularly education policy, it's very disruptive for students. We have generations of students who may not have been on the same type of curriculum or assessment. So how do we think through a short term measure, but with very long term consequences?
Yeah, so my assumption of what the Ministry of Education will do when they set up these schools is that I think it would be a small number of schools that would likely be set up around the country. I don't think that it would be a huge number of schools. So for example, one of the things, the provisions that the Ministry of Education has set up is to have schools specifically for Orang Asli students, right? And there are pros and cons to that, but on the whole, those have been positive. Those have been positive things. So I imagine that the Ministry of Education may be targeting certain populations, and it won't be sort of like a nationwide kind of massive split between the schooling systems.
Okay, would that, you know, some of the unintended consequences that people have are concerned about is that providing these types of specialized schools, even though they may address issues of access and provide the right environments for these children, but they could inadvertently create a segregation of class, of socioeconomic class, particularly marginalized groups. How do we circumvent that?
Yeah, so, you know, I think that those concerns are absolutely valid, right? And when we think about schools as sort of an equalizer, this great equalizer for society, right, in terms of giving all students access to quality education that will enable them to pursue broadened opportunities in life. But a part of being a great equalizer is not just the academic knowledge or abilities, skills that a student gains, but it's also the ability, it's sort of also equalizing socially the relationships and social capital that students have access to, right? So if you pull all of the most privileged students out of the system, you begin to create this divide, and that can be very dangerous for a society, right? Because the rich and the poor are segregated, they don't build relationships with one another, and in fact there's a lot of research that shows that actually it is that a lot of social mobility is due to the social networks and the social access to people, to relationships and friendships with people of different class. And so I think that that is very much a valid concern. So I think that and there are also challenges of the potential stigma that this will create for kids, right? And I think the Ministry of Education will definitely not brand these as schools for the poor, for example, right? But there is this stigma of what does this mean for me to be in a school like this, right? So I think that those are some of the potential ramifications, just to say that those are valid concerns for sure, right? I think that it would be very important to ensure that there are avenues for integration for students, and for students to be able to interact with other students from very different backgrounds to themselves. That will be a very important consideration.
So I also wanted to ask you, because you pointed out to some of the reasons why I think children from underserved communities or from very poor households struggle with schools. You talked about uniforms, nutrition, access, all of those things. When we think about these types of schools and the educators needed for them, the types of faculty, the types of teaching support that's needed to narrow that inequity, that gap, that divide, what is needed from an educator's perspective? How would you leverage this opportunity to really close that? If we're going to do this, let's do it right. And what are the roles of the teachers then?
Yeah. And so that's a really good point, Melissa. You know, one of the things that we focus on at Teach for Malaysia when we train our fellows is really helping fellows to understand the backgrounds and the differentiated needs of their students and the additional support that a teacher will need to do to go above and beyond traditional expectations to meet the additional needs of their students. The reality is that most teachers go through general teacher training and may not be prepared to meet the additional needs of students from very challenging backgrounds, right? So I think that this gives the opportunity for teachers going into these schools to take a more specific and customized and differentiated approach towards their students. I think it also helps to ensure that the teachers that are being selected for these schools and the kind of preparation and training that they receive is addressing the needs of their students. And so that might be a possible pro for this type of system.
All right, thank you so much, Sinsing, for helping us think through this and consider the different angles and dynamics at play here. Chan Sinsing, CEO of Teach for Malaysia, they're wrapping up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching, and good night.